morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All things political, Mondays at 9. So here we go with Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. We have a lot to talk about today. We'll preview the President's State of the Union address tomorrow. We'll talk about the hearing to confirm John Brennan as CIA director last week, in which drone strikes were discussed pretty extensively. Who directs lethal drone strikes, and do we need a better system? The Pope is resigning. This hasn't happened in several hundred years. Does that make any difference politically? And we'll look at a number of other issues as well. Here's our phone number. Join our conversation whenever you would like. Our number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. And you can always leave messages on the issues of the day on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Susan Page, hello. Thanks for being with us this morning. Hi.
Kathleen, it's great to be with you again.
Great to have you here. So what difference does it make to the world politically for the Pope to resign? Anything? Does it make any difference?
Yes, I think it does make a difference. The Catholic Church is one of the big global institutions. It's important in the United States. It's important in Latin America and in Europe and in Africa. We saw with Pope John Paul II what a difference a dynamic pope can make around the world. Look at the role that he played in what was happening in Eastern Europe during that time. So yeah, I think it's significant. I think, you know, we get wrapped up. We're talking here in D.C. about the State of the Union address. The State of the Union address tomorrow night will be long forgotten when this new pope is probably making a difference one way or another around the world.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the State of the Union. The
president, Kathleen. Also, I think it's a great political story. I mean, I've never covered the Vatican, but there are reporters who have covered the Vatican like a political story, because we know that it's politics in a different venue. That there is undoubtedly campaigning going on in a subtle way, and candidates who want to put their names forward, and strategizing and coalition building. And I bet all of that is going on this morning and this afternoon at the Vatican.
And certainly issues like health care reform and the Church's stand on birth control played into a political debate, and still plays into a political debate in this country.
Kathleen, that's a great point, because just last week we had news stories talking to leaders of the Catholic Church here in the United States about this requirement under the new federal health care law of a cost-free coverage of contraception for women. So it continues to be important here. You know, I mostly cover presidential politics. The fact is, in some of the big swing states in this country, including Wisconsin, there are an awful lot of Catholic voters. And that matters as well.
Right. Well, it'll be interesting to follow this. All right, on to the big story of the week, which will be the President's State of the Union address. He's talked about this big deal. I guess that's the phrase he's using, a big package, a big deal that will end governance by crisis, where every 2 weeks or every 2 months or every 6 months we're threatening this hard-won recovery. What's his big deal?
Well, he would like to have a big deal or a grand bargain that set spending in place for a longer period of time than we've now done. You know, now we're facing on March 1st what's called the sequester, these automatic spending cuts. To later in March, the end of the continuing resolution, the resolution that actually funds the government. We've got the debt ceiling coming up in May. And so we kind of lurch from crisis to crisis without a long-term plan, and he would like a long-term plan. The trouble is, getting there has proved to be impossible so far. And frankly, when you look at what a grand bargain would include, which is likely to be more tax increases on some people, spending cuts on popular programs like Medicare, spending cuts on the Pentagon, it is the reason a big deal has been elusive is because it is really hard to get the warring parties in Washington to agree on one.
Mm-hmm. So what's going to happen with this sequester? What's the timeline here?
Well, if nothing happens, which is often a safe bet in Washington, that nothing will happen, the spending cuts will go into effect on March 1st. Now, keep in mind that while the sequestration sounds like a huge sum of money, it's, I think, about $12 million a month. That makes it sound like a little less catastrophic. But this would be automatic spending cuts, half of them on the Pentagon, half of them on domestic discretionary programs, and some of them reasonably severe. We heard the outgoing Defense Secretary Leon Panetta speak last week about real concerns about the effect on readiness of these sequestration cuts. But, you know, I think the betting in Washington right now is that they are likely to take effect.
What is the president going to say on gun safety? Will he, as reports suggest, be having a strategy of focusing on universal background checks? Will he go beyond that?
I think the president, you know, the State of the Union is aspirational. So I expect the president, like most presidents, to talk not only about what he expects to get done, but what he wishes he could get done. So on guns, as on other issues, I think we'll hear about his broader goals, which would include a ban on assault weapons and a ban on these high-capacity ammunition clips. But if you talk to people at the White House and on the Hill, what they think is doable this year is something more limited. And the number one item that is mentioned as doable this year is expanding background checks. You know, now if you buy a gun at a gun show and some other venues, you don't undergo a mandatory background check. A lot of people, including about 9 out of 10 Americans, support the idea of making those background checks mandatory. Even that will not be easy to do. The National Rifle Association has announced that they oppose expanding background checks, says they won't work. And they say they think they have a better than 50-50 chance of defeating them. But that is where the real battleground is likely to be fought this year.
I did see Wayne LaPierre on tape announcing a few years ago that he was in favor of background checks. Do you remember that?
Yes, and in fact, there's a web ad up now that shows him saying that. Saying
is there?
It's saying it would be the reasonable thing to do to have background checks with no exceptions. And when he was testifying before the Senate Judiciary Committee 2 weeks ago, he declined to address in a substantive way what had happened to change his mind.
Well, what has happened to make this issue something we'll get a little bit, maybe universal background checks, but nothing really on assault weapons? I thought we had reached a tipping point about a month ago.
You know, you'd think so. I mean, the tragedy in Newtown was so incredible.
Yes.
I mean, it was so unspeakable that how could, you know, it's people who support more limits on guns thought, how could this possibly not be a tipping point? But, you know, you go back to 1994 when the assault weapons ban was passed by Congress and signed by President Clinton, and then you see Democrats believing that that played a big role in losses that they suffered politically, and you just don't see a great wariness, even on the part of many Democrats, to do very much when it comes to gun rights, and especially there are about 6 Senate Democratic incumbents who are up for re-election in 2014 from states where there are a lot of gun owners and supporters of gun rights, and there's just a real wariness there to do much of anything, and especially to defy the NRA.
Mm-hmm. Thursday's confirmation hearing for John Brennan is CIA director, drone strikes discussed. Why is it that there is no deep understanding here of who is in charge of lethal drone strikes and where in the world all these drone strikes have been carried out? How many innocent people have died? Why do we have so little information about that?
It's remarkable, Kathleen, and it's remarkable that it doesn't cause a bigger stir.
Right.
You know, it's caused a stir now in Washington, including from Democrats who are pressing the administration for more oversight, not really more transparency. I mean, you don't really hear even like the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Dianne Feinstein of California, who's been a leader in pushing for more oversight, talking about more transparency. She's talking about establishing a kind of secret court that would provide some oversight. But I think a lot of Americans, especially in the wake of the 9/11 attacks, look at drone attacks as something that's killing bad guys, people who want to hurt the Americans, and it does not seem to be much of a political issue. I don't know if on your show, I know you take a lot of callers, if you hear people concerned about it or not.
Well, we'll find out in just a few minutes. Do we know who directs these drone strikes? Does it come from the Oval Office? Who directs them?
Well, we know that some drone programs are run by the CIA and others by the Pentagon. There are at least 2 kind of distinct drone programs. We know that there is a requirement for a finding if a drone strike is going to target an American for essentially assassination, but we don't know a lot about it. We don't know Until recently, we didn't even know where the big drone base was. Now it's been reported it's in Saudi Arabia. It is not an area that has been is not a subject matter that's been subject to a lot of disclosure. And even in the hearings for John Brennan to become CIA director, you heard complaints from members of the Senate Intelligence Committee that they have a lot of trouble getting information about what's happening with the drone strikes and getting the legal justification for some of the strikes that have targeted American citizens.
It is problematic, isn't it? If you think of other countries getting drones, everybody could have drones and strike willy-nilly.
And, you know, drones are used for a lot of purposes. A lot of law enforcement purposes in the United States. And the ability of the incredible intelligence gathering ability of these drones is something I think Americans will want to know more about, especially if they're going to be used in the United States by U.S. law enforcement agencies.
Right. Lindsey Graham has said that he's going to hold up the confirmation of John Brennan and Chuck Hagel. Can he do that? Will that happen?
Well, he's a senator, so he can place what's called a hold on them that makes it difficult but not impossible to move forward. We talked about a moment ago about Democratic senators facing re-election in 2014 and that shaping their views perhaps on guns. I think this is a case where the fact that Lindsey Graham faces re-election in 2014 from South Carolina, that his very hardline stance may be, in fact, related to trying to make sure that he does not face a more conservative challenger in the Republican primary there. He has said that he will not filibuster these nominations. That, in fact, it has never been done. A cabinet appointment has never been filibustered in the Senate. He said he won't do that. But placing a hold on it definitely slows it down and complicates the politics of getting these two confirmations done.
Susan Page is our guest this hour, and we're particularly interested in, well, a number of issues. She wants to know about your concerns about drone strikes. Are you concerned about that, or considering what the country went through on September 11, is it okay that it's a somewhat secret program, and has it been effective in eliminating terrorists, do you think? Or do we need, as Americans, information about who directs lethal drone strikes? President giving his State of the Union address tomorrow night, in which he is to present a big deal, a big package. What would you like for there to be in a big deal? And would you agree that this is his time to present a vision for the future, knowing that maybe not everything will become a reality, but he will present something that will be stirring to the soul? We have to yet talk about the president's plan to visit the Middle East. We will talk about that with Susan. And here is how you reach us. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk@WPR.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. To you in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program today, the Lieutenant Governor of California, Gavin Newsom, will be joining us, has a new book. It's his first book, actually, Citizenville, How to Take the Town Square Digital and Reinvent Government. Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today, is our guest now. And we go to Doug in Appleton for our first call. Hi, Doug.
Yeah, hi. You were talking about the drone strikes earlier, and I wanted to mention the so-called memo that was recently released about targeted killings. And the way I understand it is that now, just based on suspicion that a person is a combatant or even just an al-Qaeda, someone up in the hierarchy, that makes them eligible even if they're U.S. citizens. And the way I understand the wording to be is that it says based on the suspicion. Now, suspicion won't even get you a search warrant in this country, but suddenly it's okay to use that as a excuse for doing what are effectively, extrajudicial summary executions of U.S. citizens. I've got a kind of a major problem with that. Like to hear your guest's thoughts on that.
Thank you, Doug.
Doug, thanks very much for your call. You know, that memo, which is really the summary of the legal justification for this action by the administration, said that if there is a U.S. citizen who is an enemy combatant and poses an imminent threat to the United States, he or she can be targeted for assassination by a drone. But, of course, in our in our system of justice generally, U.S. citizens get to, like, meet their accuser. Maybe they have a chance to surrender. There is an adversarial system where they can argue their innocence. All that is absent from this process. And I think a lot of Americans would look at this and say, well, you know, this person's involved with Al-Qaeda, and the government says he poses an imminent threat, then it's okay with me to kill him. But it is at odds with kind of our traditional judicial system and practices. And we know from 1,000 different things the government has done, the value of oversight, because what seems like a wise and proper thing to do in one setting, a few years later, may look like something outrageous and wrong that the government did. And that's why I think there is some push, including by Chairman Feinstein, to try to get at least some kind of review of these drone strikes set up as part of the system. But they're not now.
Thank you, Doug, very much for the call. We go to Willem in Colfax. Hi, Willem.
Hi. I just wanted to say something. But first, I wanted to say something about that, about needing a search warrant, like in this country. A lot of people don't know that the Fifth Amendment has really been eliminated by the Patriot Act. So it's not true that someone needs a search warrant to search someone's house. In fact, someone who is suspicious or thought to be suspicious, their house can be searched without even notifying them. So that's the Patriot Act and the elimination of the Fifth Amendment. But what I wanted to say was that I recently read a comment by, this is the highest official, former official in the United States I've ever heard make such a comment, and that was from former Vice President Al Gore, was saying what's happening in this country with the Citizens United case and unlimited political spending in our country, that we're witnessing a slow-motion coup d'etat where the people are outspent by corporate interest. And I think the evidence of that is the writing of the mining bill by Florida Corporation in Wisconsin and other sand mining interests in our state and things like that, where the power, the political power, is really in the hands of the people that were put in power by this unlimited corporate spending.
Do you see any chances of Citizen United in some way or another, and what that might be, being overturned, Susan?
Well, Willem, thanks for your call. I think that given the Supreme Court decisions on campaign finance, it seems unlikely that those contributions are going to be limited. But what I think could happen if Congress wanted to was to require more disclosure. You know, one of the alarming things about the Citizens United decision is the fact that you have this huge amount of political spending now, and you have no idea, you have no right to know where all that money is coming from. I will say this, though. If money bought elections, the Republicans would have done a lot better last November than they did, because Citizens United unleashed a flood of conservative money, but on a series of the Senate races in which we saw big spending, the candidate on whom lots of money was spent lost in the presidential race, while President Obama had a ton of money himself to spend. I don't think money determined the outcome of the presidential election. So I think we ought to keep that in mind, that we talk a lot about money and money matters, and the flood of money and the flood of blind money you don't know where it comes from is a serious thing. It does not buy elections in this country. Over and over again, we see the power of local organizing, of the field operation that the Obama campaign put together this year. The ability of that to determine elections, I think, is more powerful than money, as long as you have enough money to wage a campaign. You need some money. Having the most money doesn't buy you an election.
Mm. Gavin Newsom has a really interesting new book, and we're talking with him hour two. He calls for, which makes you stop and think about what this would mean, and it is pertinent to what we were talking about just now, drone strikes and Citizens United, money and politics, that what we need to have is total, I repeat, total transparency in government. What an interesting idea that is.
Well, it is. And, you know, I'm a big, I really believe in transparency. I mean, if we can't limit campaign spending, and there's a big argument about whether that'd be the right thing to do, at least just let people know where the money's coming from. And that applies to, I don't know if you can have total transparency in government. I'm sure in national security affairs, the fight against terrorism that we were talking about at the beginning of the hour, there are times when you can't have total transparency. But I do think transparency and oversight takes you a long way to giving you control and control of the government, and helps deliver the kind of government you want to see.
Mm-hmm. And eventually we'll have it anyway because of the way technology is developing. Don't you think, Susan, that it will all be exposed at some point?
Well, I guess I don't know about that. I mean, it is true that a lot of things are exposed now that didn't used to be. And also, you know, also a lot of things are available now that didn't used to be. You know, I'm so old, I remember before the C-SPAN. And then you had to rely on somebody's news account of a congressional hearing. That's not true anymore. Anybody in America can watch hearings, can watch the proceedings of the House and the Senate. If there's an interview, a powerful interview, you can go and you miss it on TV, you can go on YouTube and watch it. And that is something that I think is pretty remarkable. I think it's really changed Washington, and I think it's empowered people.
Mm-hmm. Ain't this world something? This modern world. Thanks, Willem, for your call. Jim in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. There are some excellent documentaries available both on HBO and Showtime currently, and one on HBO relates to, may relate to the departure of the Pope. It's called Mea Maxima Culpa, and it's a story of the abuse of the children at St. John's School for the Deaf, and how this is really only indicative of a much larger pattern throughout the church. And there may be some, at least according to the documentary, some links with the current Pope in terms, because cases of abuse were funneled through him. And after you see the film, which speaks for itself, Mea Maxima Culpa, you can also wonder a bit as to how they were able to bring this off, because it shows how the laity was propagandized on the one hand, but they also used canon law to effectively limit priests within the church from being whistleblowers on this issue. And it raises a larger issue that if systems can be used to suppress the truth in this situation, what other conspiratorial type situations might have been suppressed? And it requires, I think, us as citizens to dig a lot deeper than we're normally accustomed to doing.
We had that director on some months ago. It was a very powerful film and interview, as I recall. What do you think about that, Susan?
Well, Jim, I think you make a great point about the growing transparency, not just in government, but also in institutions like the Catholic Church. And certainly the scandal over the abuse of children has been a big part. It has been a driver toward that. Now, whether that played a role in the Pope's decision to resign, I don't know. I have to say that there are very few stories that you wake up in the morning and you look on your iPhone and you see a story that makes your jaw drop. But I got to say, this morning when I woke up and it said Pope to resign, that was one of them. That is quite a story.
Mm-hmm. That film is definitely worth seeing, Susan. It's a lot of it is focused in Wisconsin because of the St. John's School for the Deaf, where deaf men were abused and tried to have their story be told, but because it was hard to do that and nobody would listen, it focuses on their lives and also focuses on the hierarchy of the church. It's a film that it can't be ignored. You see it and you say, oh, my goodness.
You know,
it's so
interesting how these horrific stories have come out. Not only, I mean, obviously in a school for the deaf, kids are especially vulnerable. I read this weekend a story that ran in the New York Times about a juvenile detention center in Florida that over decades, boys were sent there. Many of them died and were buried in graves in basically the backyard.
Oh.
And that they are only now identifying how many children died there and trying to debate now whether to exhume their bodies to investigate and get more information about how they died. And to think this is happening in this day and age, it's just shocking.
I know. Thank you, Jim, for your call. One line is open if you'd like to join us. It's All Things Political. Susan Page is our guest here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. She is Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. We go to Tom in Marshfield next. Hi, Tom.
Good morning, Kathleen. Good morning, Susan. I want to get back to the drone issue. I was reading recently an article in, I believe it was Time Magazine, about this, and I guess I have two questions. One of them is, it's so easy to send drones somewhere where you don't have to send soldiers, but so many innocent civilians are getting killed by these, and I'm wondering if it's counterproductive in that we're just making more people hate us. And secondly, they were talking about the use of drones in the United States becoming more prevalent over the next 10 years, where you could even buy, I believe it's a drone called the Patriot, for like $300. And I'm wondering just how much of a mess that's going to be in the next 10 years in this country. Thank you.
Yes, Tom, thanks so much for your call. You know, the issue of innocents being killed by drone strikes is one that's a serious one, and that we know has caused anger and toward the United States in places like Pakistan and Afghanistan. If you read General Stanley McChrystal's book out just in the last month or so, who perfected and directed the drone program as part of the fight against terrorism, he talks about the damage that was done when innocent bystanders, our family members, were killed in drone strikes, and the care he began to take to try to keep that from happening. So I think that's a serious issue and definitely part of this debate. But to a lot of Americans, the idea of sending drones into harm's way rather than American soldiers is a pretty appealing one, I have to say. And I think that's one reason it hasn't caused more of a debate than it has so far in this country. On the issue of drones in the United States, absolutely. This is going to, you know, we think Facebook raises privacy issues. Wait until we have drones overhead that are able to see what folks are doing. I mean, it's definitely going to be an issue that we're going to have to face and debate as these become more prevalent.
Right. Let's talk about the Middle East for a moment, Susan. When does the president plan to visit? Where is he going? Why is he going now?
He's going to Israel, Jordan, and the occupied territories. He's going to go, is it in March, I think the trip is. And, of course, this is a region that he did not go to. He did not make a trip to Israel during his first term in office. That became a little bit of a controversy during the reelection campaign. It's raised hopes that the administration and the new Secretary of State may become a little more involved in the effort to resolve or address the Israel-Palestinian issue. Now, I'm not sure that's the case. I think U.S. presidents look at the experience that President Clinton had at the end of his second term, where he devoted enormous effort and came up empty-handed, basically. But it does raise the hopes that there may be a little more engagement on the part of the United States.
And is he rightfully criticized for not making this trip to Israel during the first 4 years?
I thought it was surprising that he didn't make the trip to Israel in his first 4 years, because Israel is such an important ally of the United States and a dangerous part of the world. You know, he's been at odds with some of the Israeli governments, including Benjamin Netanyahu, and maybe that made it less appealing to him to go there. And clearly he had made a decision not to make this a big focus of his foreign policy initiatives during his first term. I thought it was a little surprising, and as I said, created a little bit of an issue that the Obama campaign had to address in 2012.
Should we have high hopes for Secretary of State John Kerry? It still is hard to say that. So tied with Hillary Clinton, isn't it?
I think high hopes and Middle East peace, those are two phrases that don't often go together.
Right.
I think, you know, realistic hopes are always pretty tempered in that part of the world. And we don't, you know, Secretary of State Kerry has been in office about 24 hours or a little bit more than that. So I think it's hard to know what it's going to be the focus of his efforts. You know, there are some parts of the world that just demand attention, and the Middle East is often one of them. So is Iran at the moment, Syria, the turmoil in Egypt. Those are all things that are going to have to be at the top of his agenda.
Mm-hmm. Dan and Phelps is next. Hi, Dan.
Good morning. I have to take issue with your guest's notion that money doesn't buy elections. That isn't the point. Money buys access. And just for a few examples of the problems that it has caused with this administration, first and second issue, Obama was indebted up to his eyeballs to Wall Street. And as a result, two Wall Streeters ran the economy, Geithner and Paulson. Not one single Wall Street investment banking executive has ever been charged or even investigated for their complicit part in selling these credit default swaps and then betting against them. And on top of that, the taxpayers had to bail out AIG because AIG were the people that insured those credit default swaps, and the money that we bailed AIG out with went right into the pockets of the investment bankers. And I'll listen off the air.
Thanks, Dan.
Dan, thanks so much for your call. You know, you're exactly right. Money does buy access. And money has power. I mean, we were just talking about the power of the NRA, and a lot of the power of the NRA relates to the fact that it's a very big fundraiser and contributor to office holders who back their side of things. But I was responding to the idea that there is a slow coup d'etat in this country that relates to Citizens United and the use of money. I don't think that's true. I think citizens have enormous power independent of those who have money. But that's not to say money is of no importance. And if you want to get a appointment with your a member of Congress or a U.S. senator or a governor, if you're a contributor, I think we all know your chances of getting that appointment to make your case are a lot stronger.
Let's go to Ray in Milwaukee. Hi, Ray.
Good morning. I want to talk about this recent thing in L.A. with the shooting of the police officers by the ex police officer. Mm-hmm. I want to connect all these shootings recently. There's a mental health issue, and it's extremely problematic when it's ex-military. Think the boy in the bunker. He was held by the ex-Vietnam vet. In Milwaukee here, we had ex-Marine shoots his wife, who is a Wauwatosa police officer. In Oak Creek, didn't that shooter, wasn't he also ex-military? And maybe some other listeners could call in and add to this list, because people have been focusing on the mental health issues and guns, but I think the bigger issue is the lack of support for vets when they get back here. And we have trained them to kill, and now they are killing us, they're killing their families, and they have a suicide rate that's out of control. This is a huge thing, which for some reason nobody has put these dots together. We've trained these guys. We are partly responsible for this crazy, insane kill mentality we have in this country. We train them to kill overseas. Now they're coming home killing themselves, their families, their family pets. If I remember one story correct from up north here in Wisconsin, a two-month-old baby was killed. The ex-vet's wife was killed, and the family dog was killed. Come on, let's start waking up and helping these guys.
He makes a valid point, Susan.
You know, Ray, that's so interesting. I haven't kind of looked at that angle of it. You do list several of them where vets are involved. Of course, shooting in Newtown, that did not involve a military veteran, so it's not exclusively a military problem. But yes, we see the need for continued services for these huge numbers of soldiers who are coming home, who have come home from Iraq and who are now coming home from Afghanistan, and the need to address them. And we're all familiar with the suicide statistics, which are so shocking. So, yes, the issue of the mentally ill and guns, you know, that's one that we hear Congress talk less about because I think the solutions seem so difficult. But obviously that is a thread that ties together. You know, some kind of mental illness does seem to tie together these shooters and these big tragedies.
Mm-hmm. This trying to find this killer story in California is really something, isn't it? I was reading a couple days ago, Susan, that they had to close schools in Southern California because this guy is still on the loose. And it's another sign that you ask yourself, what in the world are we coming to? This is crazy.
And look at the change in procedures in schools. That we've seen, and not just in response to this latest tragedy. Over the last several years, much increased security at schools, procedures for lockdown. Kids practice what to do, how to hide, where to go if there's a shooter in their midst. Mm. That's not something that I faced at Costa Harris Elementary School in Wichita, Kansas. I can tell you that.
No. We had fallout shelter drills during the Cold War, but This kind of stuff would give you nightmares if you were 6 or 7 or 8, wouldn't it? It gives you nightmares when you're old, too.
Well, we had nuclear bomb drills in elementary school where we would go hide under our desks. Now, exactly the protection that would provide in the case of a nuclear attack is not clear to me in retrospect, but
that was
what we practiced.
Yeah. Thanks, Ray, very much for the call. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Susan Page is our guest. This is All Things Political, which you always hear Mondays at 9 on the Ideas Network. Susan is Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program today, we will be speaking with Gavin Newsom, Lieutenant Governor of California, also served 2 terms as Mayor of San Francisco, author of Citizenville, How to Take the Town Square Digital and Reinvent Government. He says there's a serious disconnect between how people engage with each other on Facebook, Twitter, blogs, and how they engage with government. So we'll talk about that. Susan Page is with us now. This is All Things Political. We have a line open if you'd like to join our conversation. We're talking about the President's State of the Union address tomorrow, drones being the focal point of conversation at the hearings, confirmation hearings for John Brennan, President's visit to the Middle East, gun safety, money in politics, the Pope deciding he's not going to be the Pope anymore, and more. So join our conversation, 800-486-8655. Lynn in Eau Claire is next. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. Good morning, Kathleen and Susan. Along the lines of money and politics, I'm concerned about what seems to be the corporate takeover of the Fourth Estate. We have an issue in Wisconsin with the placement by the Heritage Foundation of Mr. Smith as the head of Health and Human Services here, and we don't hear about that. And I have a disabled child, and on and on. And I did speak to a reporter at one of our local network stations up here and was told that she cannot report the news as she would like to for fear of losing her job. I mean, the Fourth Estate, is what always kept the other elected branches of government in check. And it's frightening to me.
She said she couldn't report the story because why?
Because it was a corporate decision not to. It was a corporate decision not to report the news as it is. We have a lot of good news, happy news, and very, very slanted news.
Susan?
Well, that's very distressing, and I feel certain this isn't the case with all the news outlets there, and I might encourage you to contact other TV stations or go to newspapers in the community or go to the Milwaukee Journal if you feel you have a story that should be told, because obviously that is the role of a free press. That's why we exist. That's why we have First Amendment protections. The news industry has gone through a tough patch the last 5 years or so, financially, as we all move to the web and try to figure out how to make journalism financially stable, financially sustainable in a system where you're delivering it on the Internet, where a lot of people expect to get the news for free. But the fundamental role of the press hasn't changed, and it's to tell stories, and it's to speak truth to power, and it's to provide a check on what the government is doing at the local level and the state level and the federal level. So I'm very distressed to hear that this was your experience.
That whole issue you just described is really a significant one, isn't it, of newspapers moving everything to the web, where traditionally we want the information free. So how can you stay financially viable in charge for your important work when you're used to getting it for free? How does everybody do that?
Well, everybody is still trying to figure that out.
I'm sure.
But, one thing that's happened is you'll see a lot of news outlets will only let you go 10 times free to their website a month. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you have to sign up and subscribe. That's one way. Trying to figure out how to sell ads on the Internet, on websites, is another way. One reason there are a lot of videos now on news websites is because that's a lucrative way to sell ads, because, you know, you're forced to watch the ad before you can see the video that you want to see. But it's a work in progress. You know, it's been a time of tremendous transformation for the news industry. And one of the places that's taken the biggest hit is local and state coverage.
Yes.
You know, one of my sons is a journalist, a beginning journalist. He works for a newspaper in New Hampshire, and he's been assigned to the State House. And I think there are about four people who regularly, on a daily basis, are covering the State House in New Hampshire. That's not very many to represent all the people of that state and try to provide the kind of oversight for state government that the citizens there deserve.
And it's very important work.
It is the most important work.
Right.
You know, there are a lot of There are 100 reporters, 1,000 reporters who do what I do in Washington. There are four reporters who do what he does in New Hampshire.
Thanks, Lynn, very much for the call. I hope you can get the story out. Kenneth in Janesville, hi.
Hello. The fortunes of John Kerry have risen with a book that came out about Vietnam called Shoot Anything That Moves, which is about the thousands of pages of about the massacres, the thousands perhaps of massacres that occurred in Vietnam that John Kerry testified about in 1971, and then he was swift voted when he ran for president, being called a traitor, essentially, and then Moyer also talked about us having the slowest internet in the world. I think Vietnam is going to be refought again if this book takes off about all these people that were massacred in Vietnam.
Susan.
You know, Kenneth, I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with that book. Is it recently published or has it been out for a while?
It's fairly recent, maybe a couple of months, 2-3 months old.
Yeah. Right. You know, I've got to say that this issue did not play a big role in Senator Kerry's confirmation hearings for Secretary of State. I just don't feel kind of informed enough to talk about it in a smart way.
Yeah, I vaguely recall, and I something breaking on this somewhere. You know, you read so much, you can't remember where you read it last week somewhere. Maybe it was a result of that book. We'll check into that book too, Kenneth. Thank you for calling. A couple lines are open. Join the conversation. We're talking about all kinds of things because it's all things political. President giving State of the Union. He's talking about a big deal tomorrow. What would you like to see in that big deal? The Pope has called it quits, which is a really big thing because it hasn't happened in, 500 years? So that's a big story. What are the political implications of that decision? Drone strikes consuming the Brennan hearing, confirmation hearing last week, and a lot of people saying we don't know enough about who's making decisions to conduct these strikes, who's being struck by these, and what's the future of that program? Just a few of the areas that we're discussing with Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. 800-486-8655 is our number. Ron is our next caller. Hi, Ron.
Yeah, hi. Got a couple comments. First thing I want to say is I just hope President Obama does what's right and not what's popular. As far as the drone strikes, if these Monday morning quarterbacks, when they ask why are we doing it, all they should do is replay a tape of the September 11th disaster in silence. And another thing with this with these guys coming back and they're shooting people and stuff, well, some of these guys are doing 4 and 5 tours of duty. Why don't everybody go in service and start the draft again? Not only a few at the lower income, but like they do in other countries, everybody has to serve their country for a couple years.
Susan.
Well, Ron, you know, when you said Obama should do what's right and what's not, now what's popular, if he proposed reviving the draft, that would definitely be something that was popular. That would be something that I think would be really politically difficult for him. Your point on drone strikes and replaying the 9/11 attacks, I mean, I think that's one reason that this has gone on for a decade without much oversight and without much protest. You know, we've heard a whole series of people calling in today who wanted to talk about drone strikes in a critical way. Doug did, and who else? Tom did. But I don't think that this, when we ask people, what are the top issues on your mind, as we've done in advance of the State of the Union, you know, the first thing they name is the economy, and then they name jobs, and then they name the deficit. I mean, those economic issues are at the top of people's minds. And the idea even of national security generally, much less drone strikes in particular, is down there in single digits. And I think that's why I think a lot of people remember 9/11 and think drone strikes are okay by them if it's going after terrorists who want to attack the United States.
Right. Thank you, Ron, very much for your call. 800-486-8655 is our number. Joe in Prairie du Chien. Hi.
Hi. So I wonder if you could describe the administration's take on the legal differences between using a drone versus a standard airstrike. Is it where the personnel is located? It seems the drone to be the same as, say, shooting someone across an international border.
Joe, that's a great question, and if only I were a little smarter, I'd be able to answer it, but I'm not. I don't know the difference.
Thanks very much for the call. Let's go back to what the previous caller talked about, the president saying what's right and not what's popular. Are there other areas tomorrow night that he's going to do just that, that he's got something that he's going to announce to us that is very important to him, and it may not be very popular, but it's one of his visions?
You know, Kathleen, I think there's a great example when it comes to the issue of climate change.
Ah, yes.
Because if there were two things that really surprised me about his inaugural address. One was when he likened the struggle for gay rights to the struggle for equal rights for women and for African Americans. That was a very powerful and unexpected statement for him to make. And the other thing was the focus he put on the issue of climate change, because he's done not so much when it came to climate change in his first term. You know, it was one of his big priorities when he was elected in 2008. It went nowhere in Congress, and he put it aside in favor of moving on the economy, on health care. And he didn't talk about it during the 2012 campaign, because it's not, in fact, an issue that does you much to get votes. But it was the single biggest topic. If you look at his inaugural address, the issue he spent the most time talking about was the issue of climate change. I think we're going to hear more about that in his State of the Union address tomorrow night. And in the absence of being able to do much legislatively, because that old idea of cap and trade legislation, which was the idea that that he proposed in 2008, that's not going anywhere. There are some things he can do with executive powers through the Environmental Protection Agency, and that's one of the things I expect to hear him talk about. And that goes to a vision he has that is not something that the public is demanding be done.
Thank you, Joe. We have time for one more phone call. Pat in Brookfield. Hi.
Hey, guys. Not to beat a dead horse, but I want to take a little bit of a different angle. As far as the drone strikes go, is it in my imagination, or did I just see the mainstream media? Now, I'm not talking about Fox News or MSNBC or left or right political talk radio. I'm talking about the quote-unquote objective media outlets just covering, you know, intensive interrogation a lot differently under the Bush administration, issues like Guantanamo Bay, versus under President Obama. I don't see a lot of challenging about this. Until this memo was leaked, there was hardly anything mentioned about the drone strikes. I haven't seen the Attorney General being questioned nearly as hard as I saw Alberto Gonzalez or John Ashcroft. I mean, I remember Joe Biden once saying that this was unconstitutional. We were talking a little bit about impeachment. I remember one interview with Matt Lauer where he was talking about Amnesty International and saying that, you know, because they don't believe waterboarding, you know, or believe waterboarding is torture, that, you know, we should not be doing that. And Bush very calmly said, well, we simply disagree, and, you know, my job here is to protect you. So I see the exact same, I don't want to say rhetoric, but reasoning for doing these things under the Obama administration.
All right, I need to hold you there, Pat. We only have 15 seconds left. Susan?
Pat, I think you make a great point and a really fair point. that if enhanced interrogation techniques are wrong because they are cruel against people, so is targeted assassination, and that's what these drone strikes are. Very fair point.
Yeah. Susan, thank you so much. You're a wonderful guest, and I enjoyed the hour. Thanks.
Kathleen, thank you.
Susan Page, our guest this hour, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. You hear All Things Political every Monday at 9 o'clock, a show that we enjoy and have people from, well, we have terrific guests for this. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning, who gives us the terrific guests for this show and many others. And thanks to Rhonda for doing on-air production here in Milwaukee as well. We have news coming up momentarily from National Public Radio, and we will continue our show with Gavin Newsom, who is now the Lieutenant Governor of California. He has been very prominent nationally on a number of issues. He was mayor of San Francisco for two terms as well, and he's written a great book.